You're listening to the Paranormal Patio Podcast. Pull up a chair.
Welcome back to Paranormal Patio. As always, it's me, it's Jason. You knew that before you clicked the button, and you're right here in the Paranormal Patio with me and my guest tonight, the one and only, my brother in corn, Steve Berg. Steve, welcome to the patio.
Oh my God. Well, thank you for having me. And let me just start by saying my brother in corn is now, that's wonderful. I'm stealing that.
I think it's going to be the name of the episode. It's going to be Brothers in Corn.
Oh, Brothers in Corn. That's a new cult we can start. That's a good fallback plan for us, you know?
Yeah, it's on my list now,
I think. Yeah, you know, if our million-dollar like paranormal careers don't take off, I think, you know, the Brotherhood of the Corn or Brothers in Corn, man. Dude,
yeah, come so on. Like the Brotherhood is the collective. Like anybody can join the Brotherhood, but yeah. If you want to be one of the Brothers of Corn, like yeah. You have to put in some effort.
Dude, it's you really got to pay your dues.
Did you know that there is a website called cornhub.com?
No. And is it like horny corn stuff?
I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'll let you do that on your own time.
Oh my God.
We're not here to talk about corn. Well, in a little.
Well, the corn's going to come up, pal.
It's going to come up. As it does. Like that's what its purpose is. It's to come up.
Dude.
You plant it and it comes up.
Absolutely.
So the kernels have been planted here. I would just like to thank you for coming on the show and give you a little bit of time to kind of tell my listeners who you are if they don't know. Chances are they know you and they don't even know it.
Maybe.
Take it away, Steve Berg.
You got it. Hi, my name is Steve Berg. I am an actor, comedian, writer dude. Yeah, I am. You know, and also more importantly, I have had a lifelong obsession with, you know, UFOs and high strangeness in general. And, you know, I started going to UFO conferences with like a paper bag with two slices of cold pizza. My mom would drop me off in a strange town. You know, I would like shake Stanton Friedman's hand in the 80s. And, you know, like, yeah, I have grown up obsessed with this stuff. And like, the weird thing is that it only gets stronger. It doesn't like decrease for me. You think I grow out of it, but but, you know, no. Yeah. So that's, you know, basically, yeah. So I lived in LA for 21 years. And recently I kind of moved back to Nebraska, where I have been speaking about and researching intensely Nebraska, more specifically, Eastern Nebraska. So that's kind of like my little playground, which I'm researching and trying to do some investigation. So, yeah, that's been like really, honestly, like, it's not my job. Obviously, I have to like, you know, do the acting stuff for work, but like, my real passion is doing this, is really like looking into Eastern Nebraska. So that is me in 2023.
Just be me in 2023.
I'm trying, man. No matter how far I run away from it, I'm right there, you know?
Yeah. You're in an interesting position as, you know, people look at actors in a different way, I think, than they look at just your normal Joe show on the street, right?
Maybe, yeah.
You don't think about celebrities and actors and musicians, like big time musicians and things, being into the same type of things that you're into. So right. It's kind of a refreshing take to see someone who has gone forth and made content for, you know, literally millions of people across multiple platforms. I mean, you've done, you know, a lot.
Yeah, thanks.
What's that like for you? Like, how are you looked at from both sides, do you feel?
You know, like, I guess it's a really good question you ask. The one thing about like artists in general, I have found, because like, you know, I have a lot of actor friends and writer friends or friends in the industry, but I've always surrounded myself with artsy people. And I think one reason is because they're accepting of different viewpoints of life, you know, I mean, not all of them. That's not like a blanket statement. I just found that like, I gravitate towards creative people and, you know, free thinkers and people who like, are not afraid to talk about politics, religion, and philosophy and stuff like that. It's been, but you know, I will say, like, you know, when I was kind of like, definitely a little bit of an outlier in like kind of the alternative comedy community of LA, just because I would do a lot of high strange, or I always tried to do a lot of like weaving high stranges into like, whether it was improv shows, sketches, or things, TV shows I've pitched, which I've never been successful at. but I have like, it's always what I want to talk about. I feel like it's like, you know, it's weird. I wanted to be the guy who like made the first good high strange film or TV show, but not that there hasn't been good ones. I mean, I think Twin Peaks is the best TV show ever made, and that's a high strange show. You know, X-Files was good fun. There's been some, but like, I wanted to do like a John Keel type show where there's a John Keel type character investigating John Keel type stuff. But it's a tough sell. I'll be honest.
Sure.
It didn't go well.
I mean, I'd be there for it for sure.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I would hope so. I'd be making it for you.
Thank you. I feel like, I don't know, the longer that I spend time completely submerged into this niche of high strangeness, fanboydom, I feel like the puddle is growing larger, but I don't think we're anywhere near the ocean. You know, no. I think we're getting there, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like as much as people want to, you know, because there is a lot of, there is a lot of toxicity in this, you know, not this community. I'm saying just like at large and paranormal, ufological, you know, like there, and there always has been, right? But yeah. I also like, I'm kind of looking at a lot of like what's happening these days as a glass half full, because there used to be just like, I feel like this dualistic way of looking at, even like take UFOs, for example, either they exist or they're extraterrestrials from another planet. Now, like every theory is on the table, and I think every theory has validity, and you're not crazy if you think like there's a co-creation, you know, aspect to it, or that maybe it's a collective unconscious manifestation that shows its faces in many ways. Like these ideas are on the table, and I think they're taken seriously. And, you know, there's a lot of good, like on a show like yours, you know, there's just great thought experiments happening now. And as someone who has been consuming UFO books, paranormal, high strangeness books, basically I've never not been reading one my entire life since I was 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
I've been consuming him my whole life. And I don't think there's ever been a better time. Right?
Oh,
like 10 years ago, we didn't have a guy like Josh Cutchin. Like, I can't believe I get to, one, when I get to be friends with him, but two, name drop. but I mean, like, I think there are so many people doing the most exciting work. I wouldn't call Hellier a mainstream show. The fact that a show like that with that kind of subject matter made the splash that it did tells me that I think we're headed more in the right direction than we're not. So I feel good. I feel pretty good about the state of things. And like a lot of my friends in the community don't, you know, and I understand that point too. But me personally, like I feel like it's the best time ever, you know? So
I had a conversation last night and we were talking about, well, I mean, Hellier came up, but it wasn't just about Hellier, about how I feel like one of the biggest contributing factors of what Hellier brought to the table wasn't even just the subject matter, but it was the bridges that it built between people to all of a sudden the crazy idea you have in the back of your head about one aspect of the phenomena. You have someone else that also watched it and they're like, hey, let's talk about that. You know, if it wasn't for that, you and I wouldn't be sitting here right now because one, I wouldn't even have this show. And two, I never would have went to the Strange Realities conference and met you. Yeah. I think it's been really great from a lot of different angles. And the same token though, is that you have shows like Ghost Adventures and all that nonsense that's on TV. That's, I mean, it really contributes a lot to sort of the kookiness that we're all viewed as having.
And it's also just like, it's such, you know, it's such one, it's, you know, I look, if you could, you know, let's take the, and when I say paranormal, you know what I mean? UFOs, everything, cryptozoology, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're here for.
Right? So paranormal patio. So I think, you know, you can kind of view the paranormal world in terms of like the personalities as like a high school clique. You got the people who are kind of like, bro, tough guys, I'm going to go bag a Bigfoot, or like talking shit to a ghost when they like, or a spirit when they walk into a house. And like that, cool. That's not for me. But they definitely clearly have a big, pretty good audience because that, you know, but like there's different sections and that's what's good about now. Like, I think Hellier kind of brought this, like, and I don't want to like, I don't want to like, you know, try to like deconstruct it too much. You know, it's not my show, but like, I think it brought this kind of like emotional side to the paranormal. Like, it's okay to like be emotional and tie it into like your lens and how you view the world, you know, and like, even like, you know, make your own life part of the mystery. To me, like Hellier, what I think it did, one, I think it just in terms of like a, you know, production standpoint, they shot it in a way that for, and really for no money, in such an artful way. They actually thought about artistic value. And for me, I had not seen that in paranormal reality TV or, you know, docuseries or whatever. I really had not seen that. And I think they brought a quality aspect and an artistic value that reminds me of like 90s independent cinema, where people were trying to do a lot with very little. And they succeeded. And to me, it's like, oh, they actually raised the artistic value of High Strangeness. I was like, I never saw that coming. So to me, as a art, like as a, you know, consumer of the arts and, you know, making my living it, I appreciated that in to such a high degree.
Yeah, because if you look at sort of the dichotomy of pre-existing paranormal television, you have the sort of Crash TV style of the ghost shows that's always night vision.
Right, right,
and
right.
Then you have the super sterile History Channel type view, you know, and then this is that weird total outlier, you know, and so I totally agree.
Yeah, it's just nice to see someone take a chance because they took a big swing and it could have very easily missed. You know, it really could have. You know, and I didn't know that much about Greg and Dana before that. I knew of them. I read their website sometimes that they seemed like cool people, but like I wasn't watching it for them. Like I watched it on a whim because I heard the Kelly Hopkins case had something to do with it. I'm like, well, I got to check it out. And I was pretty drawn in just from like the tone and like the artistic value even before the content got interesting. So I thought that was so refreshing. And I think they raised the bar. So like people now, when they want to make their own stuff, they can go, well, I'm going to make it as cool as possible. Not try to do something different from the History Channel, do something different from Ghost Adventures, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of, to me, that good art has been infused in High Strangeness, to me, is really just makes my heart warm. And so I think it's such an exciting time.
It's also exciting because of the availability of technology now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've been working on a documentary for like the last 3 years.
Oh, wow. I think I've heard you talk about this. Is it about Editorpia?
Yeah, Editorpia.
Yeah.
We can talk about it in a minute if you want.
I would.
But I shot it all from my Google Pixel 5 phone.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? And to look at the quality, I mean, it's 1080, it's 4K.
Yeah.
Like, I can look at it however I want. And it's like, I don't have a big fancy film camera. You know what I mean? I've never been to film school.
Yeah.
You don't have to anymore. You know what I mean? You already have the technology most likely in your pocket and you can get out, you know, find what part of the mystery really attracts you or just let the mystery attract you and go wherever it takes you.
You know,
you have it right there and you have the freedom of being able to just put it on YouTube if you want. You know what I mean? It's not even that hard to put it on Amazon, you know, or Apple or whatever.
Yep.
And I think it's great because, well, it's also terrible because you have people with no idea at all that, you know, what they're into.
Right.
But if you have the effort that you put into it as a measuring stick, you know, weeds itself out for the things that are, you know, going to be watched, not watched, whatever. But
dude, I totally agree. Like, I'm terrible at editing, but I'm teaching myself to edit right now because I have been shooting hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of footage at, like, you know, places where Bigfoot crossed the road or where Herbert Shermer's UFO landed or, you know, the Walgreen Lake monster in Nebraska. I mean, like, I'm just driving out to these places to Nebraska with a GoPro, you know, a $400 GoPro. And it looks and sounds really good, you know, at least to me, you know, for what I'm doing. It's like a no budget type of thing. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to start, you know, releasing videos and it's more just to document Nebraska than it is to like, I have no like, you know, notion that it's anything, you know, big will happen with it. But it's just more for me and people who might find Nebraska weirdness interesting. So it's, you know, because I do feel after years and years, gosh, now I don't even know, 30 years of looking into this stuff, I do feel this like urge to contribute and give something back, you know, and if, you know, whatever form that may take, because I truly love this stuff and I care about the work people do so much. So I just want to be this cheerleader for, you know, all the good work that's coming out.
We need more people like Steve Berg. So this brings us to a question, like, what was it that really got you into high strangeness? You know, you mentioned you've been into it your whole life, but like, what was the first thing you remember?
Man, well, it's a good question. I grew up in a household with like no organized religion at all. And so I've kind of like looked back and tried to like figure this question out because I've been asked it quite a bit. And I think my best guess is that I was definitely like a, you know, kind of an artsy dreamer kid, and I just didn't have any religion. And so I think high strangeness was a form of the other or something metaphysical or something that's non-human that, you know, could interact with us that was intriguing to me. And so I think it was almost kind of took the place of any kind of organized religion. And my mother, you know, was a school teacher. And so she was a big reading advocate. And I would read, the only books I would actually like read and read through were books about like UFOs and ghosts and, you know, Loch Ness Monster, you know. She got me like the Time Life book series, which was like, you know, one series was about ghosts, one was about UFOs and blah, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. So that like, that was a game changer for me. That was like kind of an epiphany moment as a kid. So I'm like, oh my God, what could be more fascinating than this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and I would run downstairs and show my dad like a hoaxed Bigfoot picture, you know. And I go, Dad, why is no one talking about this? And he's like, oh my God, you know, like, why is my son the weirdo? Go play football.
Dude, I was going to ask, like, looking back on those books now that you looked so fondly on as a child, like, I mean, mm-hmm. You can tell that they're just terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I was, like, a huge Billy Meyer fan when I was a kid. I remember, like, when I was really little, I checked out, even before I was 9, checked out, like, this Billy Meyer picture book. And it was just, like, a greatest hits of his photographs, which I will say to this day, I find to be great art. I think he's a wonderful photographer and the best UFO hoaxer of all time. Like I actually love his pictures, and I really need to get one of his prints like framed for my office because like I find them so beautiful. But yeah, I was like a huge Billy Meyer kid. So I was like, well, how could that be faked? I mean, this is real. I'm like, why is this not talked about in the news? It's crazy. Yeah, but I was definitely into total junk as a kid.
Yeah,
you know,
dude, I remember the first time I read a Sylvia Brown book, I'm like, oh my God.
Yep.
I have to tell everybody. And then everybody just laughed at me, you know, like,
yeah. I mean, when I look back, but you know, and even kind of like, you know, even when I was a kid, I remember like kind of like getting in like middle school, and I was all about like the conspiratorial side of like, well, God damn it, we got to figure out what's in Area 51, you know, like, you know, Bob, when Bob Lazar came out, I was like, oh Jesus, this is, guys, look out, this is it, you know, like,
yeah.
So I was super gullible, and I would just like, I just wanted to believe everything. So I kind of would.
Do you miss that feeling?
No, I don't, because I think part of the fun is like sifting through it and like, you know, I heard somebody, it might have been Josh Cutchin, and I think it was Josh Cutchin quoting Jeffrey Kripal. The quote was, I'm probably going to butcher it, is that UFOs are the only subject that you'll start, 1 year you'll be reading UFO books, five years later you'll be reading about Arabian mystics from 2,000 years ago. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly and I what feel you're like, saying.
Yeah, it's like right now there's very few UFO books that I'm going to glean any kind of new information from, but I've like, you know, I'm reading about like the Celtic fairy faith, you know, and I'm reading about like all kinds of weird spiritualism groups. I feel like when you get into high strangeness, it just widens your worldview. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because like if you're just reading books about like Sasquatch, UFOs, ghosts, I think you're really limiting yourself, because even like reading about world religions, you know, and like, it's like, I'm fascinated with so much more stuff. Like, I feel like I'd probably be a lot less intelligent of a person if I wasn't into this stuff, because it got me reading voraciously at a young age, and I've never stopped. Like, I'm just a reader. Like, reading is like my, it's my release. I think because I work in TV and movies, like, it's ruined it a little bit for me, where I'm like, oh, sometimes I'll see, I auditioned for that part. Now I'm depressed when I watch the show, you know, like it is, or I'll just think about how the sausage is made too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's, I mean, it, look, it hasn't ruined cinema like that for me, but it's like, it's not the like stress, it's not like the escape it is, I think, for some people, but books are for me, you know, like just sitting down with like an old Jacques Vallée book or a Kiel book or, you know, Daemonic Reality or something like that, you know, like it's just like, I just got done reading Vallée's Forbidden Science Volume 5, and it was just, oh, it was so great.
I just finished a Jacques Vallée book myself.
Which one?
I just read Passport to Magonia.
Oh, dude. That's, oh, wow. That, I mean, that's like, that's one of the, to me, that's a top three book of all time.
I am going to upset you. I hated it.
A lot. Well, because it's dry.
No, it's because it's all over the place. It's an unorganized mess.
It is.
The message, I'm there for 100%. The ideas that he proposes, I was already thinking it before I read it.
Right.
But the book itself is a steaming pile of overrated, just overblown fanaticism.
Right. Well, I mean, I can hear that. I hear you. But what I would counter with, and I'm not trying to debate you on this, is that when I read it, which was a while ago, I had never – those ideas were not in the meta. Like those ideas were not out there, at least where I was finding them. Because – I think when I – that was one of the books that when I was done reading it, I was like, oh, I don't believe in the ETH anymore.
Mm.
It had that kind of effect on me. So and I did read it probably 15-ish years ago, 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I hear you. It's not his most eloquent book. When I say it's a top three Vallée book for me, it was the one that changed my way of thinking the most.
I can understand that 100%.
You know, like Messengers of Deception is the sexiest book he's ever written, you know, or like – you know, Dimensions. There's books that I think are like higher quality and easier reads. Mm-hmm. But I think the message and like taking all like kind of the different threads, because there is a lot of threads in that. I agree. It is not the most organized book.
Not at all.
But when you synthesize all down to the message, it had such an impact on me.
Yeah. I could definitely see that. If I was coming from that perspective, I'd probably feel a lot differently about it.
Right. But you knew about these ideas when you read it. So, I could see that.
I started this year with a goal of reading 15 UFO books published before we landed on the moon. The sub goal of only picking the next book by an author or a case that's mentioned in one of the books that I've already read.
Oh my God, that's great.
So I think I've read 6 now.
What are they?
Okay, the best one is Uninvited Visitors by Ivan T. Sanderson.
Whoa, how did you get that?
I bought it. I bought a first edition with a complete dust jacket and the hologram card on the cover for like $50 on eBay.
What?
Yep.
Dude, that's a steal, man.
I know. And it's such a great book.
I wish they'd reprint it because I've read a PDF. I can't remember which one. I read a PDF. Like, I found PDFs of his books, but like, they are hard to come by.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really, really good. I loved it.
You're so lucky.
My last book that I just finished was, hold on, I'm going to roll to my bookshelf. All right.
Yeah, please do. Take us with you. Keep talking. Sing.
All right, hold on. We're going on a field trip. I'm detaching my microphone from the stand.
This is fun, guys. We're moving.
My bookshelf. Okay, so this is what I have read UFO books from before we landed on the moon this year. The first was I read Flying Saucer to the Center of Your Mind.
Oh yeah, sure. Read that one. That's fun. And that's basically like a anthology of like writings of Kiel.
Right. That's what I knew. I picked that first because I knew there would be mentions to a lot of different experiences. Yeah,
it's a fun read. It's really good.
I have, these are in no discernible order from this point. I mentioned Uninvited Visitors. I have read Flying Saucers and the Three Men.
That's the Bender book, right?
Yes, it is.
I've never read it.
Dude, I'm embarrassed. Okay. It's a decent book. The physical book itself that I bought is the worst smelling book that I have ever held in my entire life. And it was a complete struggle to make it through because I would smell it for hours after reading it.
Oh God, your fingers smell. Yes, yeah, man.
It's stuck in my sinus. A bad time. Passports and Magonia.
Oh, yes.
My books are all disheveled.
Yeah, that happens. My library is a absolute nightmare.
The Coming of the Saucers, I think is what it's called. That's the...
I don't know what that is.
That was the... Oh, I'm going to have so much fun editing all of this silence out of here. Hold on. I'm trying to find it because my bookshelf is just... Fine. It's insane. I feel like an idiot. Where did it go? The Coming of the Saucers is the Kenneth Arnold book.
God, good for you. You're really doing your homework.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I do. Yeah. Oh, and then I have a stack in my car that I haven't put back yet. So I don't remember. I've read them so fast. I was talking to Nathan Isaac last night about the Kenneth Arnold book, but I kept calling him Albert Bender because it's all been like, I don't remember anything like that about Albert Bender. And I'm like, did I say Albert Bender? He's like, yeah, you've been talking about Albert Bender for 15 minutes. And I'm like, oh, no, I meant Kenneth Arnold.
Yeah. Or I meant George Adamski. I mean.
So, yeah, dude, are you familiar with the Kenneth Arnold story?
The flying the airplane over the Puget Sound and seeing a Delta-shaped craft, right?
Mm-hmm. And eight others.
Yeah. And then, but like, you know, that's kind of the funny thing because, you know, the reporter, because he said it skipped like a flying saucer,
mm-hmm.
then the reporter just said, flying saucers. And then that's what everyone started saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So
I do too.
Ray Palmer sends him to Washington to investigate a story for him after he has this encounter. And it's the story of the guy on the fishing boat and the UFO donuts circling over the lake.
Maury
and
Island, yeah.
Which is the Maury Island incident, right? Chrisman. And so he goes out there at the behest of Ray Palmer, which is just another facet of the whole thing. Yeah. And he meets this guy. He's like, I've got samples of the slag, right, that came off of this craft. And it's in a box at my office. He's like, come with me and I'll show it to you. And they go to this like nondescript house, like in the middle of town. The secretary is there doing bookkeeping. He gets it, shows him whatever. Over the course of like a week or whatever, there's the military intelligence guys show up. And then whenever they leave, their plane blows up and they die.
Yep.
With a box of stuff on it. But, so they're getting ready to leave, Kenneth Arnold and the Smithy, the something Smith guy that he is friends with because of the incident. They go back to the office, the house, to say goodbye or whatever to the guy. And the house is like they've never been there. Like there's cobwebs over everything. It's completely empty. It's like it's been sitting vacant for months. And that was my favorite part of the story. I was legitimately like goosebumps and like creeped.
That is some Men in Black, like crazy, wonderful Keelian stuff. Mm-hmm. That is the kind of stuff that keeps me alive, man. I love it. Because I haven't read the book, but I have heard that story. I don't remember the part about the cobwebs and the house being like empty.
Yeah, I didn't.
But was this was not long after Arnold had his initial sightings, right? Because I remember that Ray Palmer like kind of hired him to be a UFO investigator.
Yeah, and he calls Palmer and he's like, you know, I'm out. Like these guys just blew up on their airplane. He's like, I will give you your money back. Like I'm done. And Palmer's like, just keep it. Don't worry about it. You know, be safe. Whatever. Be vigilant.
Damn.
So weird. Though.
Yeah, and what makes you wonder if Palmer set him up, though, you know, with because I mean obviously, you know, maybe not, but like Chrisman,
yeah,
he is such a shady character, you know.
Yeah,
like he is an uber, he's like a Rick Doty, you know, of that era. He is such a shady, like, kind of grifter. And supposedly, like, do you know he was in, like, the Warren Commission?
Yeah.
JFK thing? Like, he's one of those guys who was, like, around a lot of, like, weird stuff. I would love to read a book about him because I do love those kind of, like, fringe, like, shady, weird characters in this field. And there's a lot of them.
Well, I would argue that, you know, The Coming of the Saucers, you know, by Kenneth Arnold, like a third of it is Kenneth Arnold's experience. And dealing with the fallout of being the first guy to see these things. But then the other two thirds is that investigation. And I didn't know exactly what I was getting into when I, you know, I cracked the book open for the first time. I knew I was familiar with the story, you know, beforehand, right. But like, I didn't know all that I read about Chrisman and that whole incident. There is just layers and layers of shady shit going on in that story.
It's, I mean, like, yeah. And that is kind of what the one thing about UFOs, especially in, you know, in all these fun topics that we love with High Strangeness, UFOs have like the most like ridiculous history, you know, of like grifters, of shady stuff, of people dying like untimely deaths, you know, like it's just full of like intrigue and like there's a whole cloak and dagger aspect to it. I mean, it's just, it's so fun to study, you know, and then, you know, like, and then it's also fun to watch how people in 2023 are falling for the same bullshit.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And part of me feels sorry for him. I'm like, guys, oosh, you should read some books. Why are people listening to Rick Doty again? Oh my gosh. Like, this is so crazy, you know, like, yeah, but it's fun. You know, they'll learn.
We all did.
You know. They'll learn. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh man. I bought into like, you know, gosh, even like in the early 2000s, I saw like Stephen Greer speak probably like, I guess, 23 years ago. Mm. And it was during this whole kind of like congressional, he had just like released that book of all the testimony, and I bought it and read it, and I was on board, man. I'm like, this is happening. Greer is the guy to do it. You know, and then like a year later, I was like, oh man. I can't believe I bid on that, you know? So
yeah, yeah. I mean, he's presented some interesting evidence.
Totally. No, I mean, like I'm not like a really, you know, like I know how a lot, I mean, like, look. A lot of people really can't stand the guy. He's kind of a polarizing figure. Mm-hmm. I don't have a huge problem with him. I think he's sort of genuine in what he's tried to accomplish. Now he's got distracted, and now he's kind of like, you know, sort of, you know, veering into a messiah type territory that I find unsavory. But like, you can't take away what he's tried to do, you know?
I think my biggest turn off from him is like the money grabs for the T5 stuff. You know, he's like, anybody can do this. All you have to do is meditate. And then he's like, it's $3,000 to come and meditate with me in a field.
Yep. I actually think it's five. I'm not even joking.
It might be.
I think it's five for like the weekend package.
Yeah. The weekend package.
includes one veggie taco, you know? Yeah, so.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. That could be for an additional charge.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. That's the VIP gold package, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's fascinating, though. I like to get takes from people about the extraterrestrial side of UFOs before we ever left our planet.
Yeah.
You know, because it's interesting to see how they felt at the time. There's been a few instances where it's come up about theorizing of physical life on Mars and Venus. And it's like with earlier stuff that I read, obviously, it's like, you know, that's, you know, not going to happen. Especially Venus.
I know we're going, we're going to look, aren't they looking at Venus now for the first time up close or something like that?
Sounds right.
I think I just heard that, or like, you know, they're going to look for signs of life that's like non-carbon life or whatever. But I don't know, the extraterrestrial thing, I guess, like, gosh, if it turned out to be that and we knew that conclusively, I guess I'd be like, all right, cool. I was wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's not even that I want to be right or I think I'm right. It's just the most boring and unsexy theory to me at this point.
Well, yeah, yes and no. I agree and I disagree, because I think that there is so much potential of learning from a species from another planet. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it would be a lot cooler if they've been living on the layer of onion above us our entire existence. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. And I kind of, you know, I'm not certain about anything, and I don't have any beliefs, and I don't have a belief system in any of this stuff, but that sort of general idea is the most intriguing notion to me in this current time. Now, in a year from now, maybe I'm like, dude, it's the ETH, bro. You know, like, I change my mind yearly with this stuff, and I'm probably a fence sitter for life, but you know, it's, you know, right now, like it's a good way of putting it.
I think that the extraterrestrial angle is what's used so often because it's the easiest for people to understand. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
100%. Totally agree. Totally agree. And yeah. I mean, you know, it's also kind of like Bigfoot, the same thing. It's like the easiest way to understand the idea of Bigfoot, not even that if it's real, is that it's like a missing link, you know, relic hominid type thing. That is the easiest thing to understand because that's the materialist view. Immaterialism's always easier to understand than immaterialism.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially if you can put a Bigfoot picture on a sticker and sell it for $18 to people who have never otherwise had any discussion about the creature.
Yep, exactly. You know? Exactly.
It's funny. Like, some of these things that come up in pop culture and in mass marketing, like the Bigfoot pizza from Pizza Hut. Like, what the fuck? Right. I know. Like, why is that a thing? Why do people like fond memories of the Bigfoot pizza or... You know, like Marvin the Martian, for example. It's like these are things that are observed by everyone in a, you know, non-third world country on a regular basis for, you know, whatever the window is. Yeah, yep. Marvin the Martian's been around forever, but they're surrounded by that stuff and they fail to ever like pull back the curtain and look at like what Bigfoot might actually be. You know what I mean?
Right. It's something I struggle with, you know, because I guess since like, you know, the big New York Times article came out, I had a lot of friends from like college, high school, friends in LA were all texting me saying, holy shit, dude, you were right. And I'm like, no, I'm not right about anything. Like, you know, like I'm like, but I think they were like, I think they were like texting me thinking that I'm going to have this feeling of validation.
Right.
Because Lou Elizondo had a, did or didn't have a research group that was paid by for the government or paid for by the, you know, taxpayer dollars. It did nothing for me. No. You know, like, and it's hard for me to explain to people. They're like, well, why aren't you excited about that? You believe in like, you know, aliens and stuff. I'm like, well, not exactly. You know, so it's like, it's so tricky. I was actually talking to my brother who like flew in town for the weekend. You know, we were hanging out today and I was telling some of the stuff that I'm up to and the research I'm doing. And he's like, so you really think there's a flesh and blood Bigfoot in Nebraska? And I'm like, no, I don't. He's like, so what are you out there like talking to people about and researching that? I'm like, well, the idea, and he was so confused by the time I was like explaining it to him. I'm like, well, it might be like just a manifestation of blah, blah, blah. You know, and I went to this like, and he's like, all right, man, like, you know, I'm glad you're having fun with it. That's basically what he said. Right. Like, you know, I'm the weird little brother anyway. So, you know, but it's, I'm sure you've run into that, you know, being a guy who's probably, you know, maybe known for being interested in this stuff amongst people you know, because if they're not into this stuff, trying to explain your point of view is really difficult.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up and ask you. Like, does it discourage you from talking to, you know, just regular strangers about stuff?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm kind of like, so you mean like I used to go to like, I mean, like if I've known you for more than 5 minutes, I'm going to ask you if you've had something weird happen.
You haven't asked me yet.
Oh, I haven't, but it's your show. I'm trying to, and I will, I guarantee I will. But you know, I am genuinely like curious, you know, and it, you know, like a lot of people say, this isn't like a unique thing, but a lot of people will say, you know what? No, I really haven't. 30 seconds later, like, but there was this one time, you know, then like, you know, then they're always like, well, wait, hold on, actually. But I am so open about talking about this stuff, probably more than ever now. Cause like, you know, when you get old and you've killed your ego enough, you just don't care what people think about you. So
yeah,
I have no problem. I ask anyone who will listen, really, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like I got a great UFO story from my dental hygienist 10 minutes into meeting her.
Oh, share it.
And it was, she was like in Minnesota. She was from Minnesota, grew up in Minnesota, and they were driving to Lake Okoboji for the weekend. And when they're driving back at night, she said that her dad goes, holy shit. And then like pulls the car. They're on a highway going back, you know, up to, I think, St. Paul, where she was from, around Minneapolis. And they said like this, like blue, whitish light, like a rose out of a field hovered there and then zipped off into the air.
Wow.
And her dad, I guess, was so excited about it. He pulled the car over, got out. He like went into his luggage, got a camera. This is like, I think this happened in the early 2000s, you know, but the thing had disappeared by then, but like the dad could not stop talking about it. And then she said her dad became obsessed with like reading about UFOs. And she's like, he was not that kind of guy, you know, like, and she said, you know, I was a kid and it, like, I thought it was cool, but we were all so startled by how it affected our father because like he went nuts about it. And I'm like, oh, that's a great story. Thanks for telling me.
How did that come up? Like, did she just know that you're into weird stuff?
I asked her. We were just talking and meeting. I was telling her, like, oh, I just moved back to Omaha, blah, 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 you know, like, and I said, I'm just kind of like researching, you know, collecting stories about folklore of Nebraska and, like, you know, explained to her. And I was like, have you ever had anything weird, you know, happen to you? And she just told me the story. And a lot of times I'm just fishing, especially since I moved back to Omaha, because I am always fishing for stories because I find that it bears a decent amount of fruit. Like, a lot of times I'll ask somebody if they've ever had a weird experience. They're like, no, but you know, my father grew up on this ranch outside Nebraska.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they used to see lights in the tree line. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Where is that? And they'll tell me, oh, it was in Stromsburg, Nebraska. I go home, write that down. I start Google Earthing Stromsburg. I'm like, boom, got to visit Stromsburg. So for me, like, every, even the smallest data point is wildly exciting to me. And I feel like the best way I've found doing that is, like, aside from, like, talking to historians and some of the other, you know, UFO people in Nebraska, is just honestly, like, cold calling, you know, park wardens, or just talking to people on the street, or being at a bar, having a couple beers, just asking people, you know, and, like, not every time. I mean, my percentage is probably 1 out of 10, but, like, 1 out of 10 is pretty good.
What's your percentage with park wardens?
Not good.
Yeah.
A lot of them have left. I did have one who actually, because there was this one, there's a case from 2014 that happened about 70 miles away from where I am now. And it was a really good case. I thought, like, the story is really good. It kind of shook up this whole, like, little tiny village community. And so I called the sheriff of that county, of Butler County, had a great conversation with him. And then I was finally able to get the David Stubitz, who is the game park or park warden for Eastern Nebraska. And I talked to him and he told me some pretty interesting stuff, you know, like, not just about this case, but he's had farmers calling him out saying they saw a Bigfoot messing around their shed. And then he'll go look at the shed and the shed will be like the, you know, like the sheet metal, that kind of like wavy sheet metal that, like, you know, farm sheds are made out of. Does that ring a bell?
He's sitting in one right now.
Are you really? Well, he said he found one that was, like, torn up, that looked like somebody took it, like a piece of paper, and tore it.
Wow.
And he's like, I don't know of any weather phenomenon, not even tornadoes, that would tear something like that. And so this game warden was like, look, if you had asked me, like, 10 years ago, like, I wouldn't thought it. But he's like, I've seen, you know, I've looked into some pretty weird things. He's like, I'm not saying I believe in Bigfoot, but there's definitely some weird things that we just don't understand how it's happening. And I'm like, that's a pretty good quote, you know? So it's been fun. It's been really fun, you know? I mean, most of the times I strike out, but I actually just, you know, I think in the fall I called this place called Fontenelle Forest, and it's just a park right outside of Omaha, just kind of like this, like, you know, it's acreage with a bunch of forest and, you know, you can go hike and it's really pretty. But an old retired lawyer who was a bird watcher and bird photographer who had been coming there like twice a week for 20 years came rushing into the front office. And this is just, this happened like in September. And he said he looked, I talked to the woman at the front desk. And this is also because I cold called the place. And the woman said the guy was so traumatized. And when he, like, when we finally calmed down, he said that he saw a giant man covered in fur holding like a log down by the Missouri River. And he said he was so frightened. He said, I'll never come back.
Wow.
To my knowledge, like, I talked to the woman about 2 months after this happened. And she's like, he did not come back. This man had been coming in for 20 years.
I think I remember you telling the story in Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did. Cause it was when I told it in Nashville, it was very fresh. I just found that out and I was really excited about it. I've called and followed up and, you know, I've left my name and information for the guy to call me, but, you know, I don't think he's been back in there, you know, so I would love to talk to him. But that, I mean, that's like 20 minutes from my front door.
Yeah.
And in Omaha, while it's not like, you know, New York City, it's a million people, you know, sure. it's a city.
Yeah, yeah. So
Eastern Nebraska is the most, by far the most populous part of Nebraska. The farther west you go, the more like isolated it is. So sure. Like, it definitely is a bit easier because a lot of these towns are towns, even like the small towns are 50,000 people, you know, so they will have a historical society and stuff. So yeah, I've been pretty lucky.
I remember, you know, the first time I talked to Nathan and he always was quick to say, you know, this is, you know, Somerset's just a small town in Kentucky and all this stuff. And like, I had the image of like small town here.
Yeah.
And I go to Somerset the first time and it's like, holy shit, like, this isn't a small town.
I've like looked, because I'm so curious about it, I've like, you know, looked at it online and stuff, like oh no, it just looks like kind of like a hip college town.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, there's a vibe there for sure.
Yeah,
you should definitely go.
Yeah, well, I did a little short segment for Pennyroyal. We were, you know, Nathan and I were talking afterwards, and he invited me to come down. I'm like, dude, be careful what you wish for. I'm coming then.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, I want to go in a big way. That I'm hoping this summer I can, you know, because I want to do, I've been doing like these little kind of, you know, paranormal road trips, you know.
I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, dude, it's like, what, I mean, like, I feel like an old retired man now. It's like, well, you know, my idea is fun is like getting behind the wheel and stopping at, you know, like places UFOs landed in history, you know, like, but for me, I don't know what could be better. Like, I'd rather do that than go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
No, I makes perfect sense to me, because.
To you, yeah, but you and I are very alone in this.
So we've talked a lot about UFOs and Bigfoots and then like sort of this culture that we're in.
Yeah.
But like one thing we haven't touched on, and I'd be interested in getting your take on, is how you feel about magic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I think it's part of it, you know, part of all this. I mean, like, I wouldn't even like, to me, I wouldn't even like, you know, separate that in conversation. I'm very interested in it, have a very limited knowledge of it. You know, I'm no Ren Collier, you know, like, but I'm deeply interested in it. You know, I've read books about Aleister Crowley. I'm actually about ready to start a PDF copy of Beyond the Mauve Zone by Kenneth Grant.
Mm-hmm.
I might be getting the title wrong, but I'm deeply interested in, you know, all this magic and, you know, just tradition of it, because I feel like it is part of the high strange world. You know, I don't really see it that differently, I guess. Because I think they're trying to communicate with the same stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
call it ultra terrestrials or whatever you want to call it. I think it's sort of the same thing. And I find it deeply fascinating.
Yeah.
Deeply fascinating. Yeah. I mean, but like my knowledge is not, you know, I know a lot more about, I guess, like, you know, UFOs and paranormal stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I'm very interested, you know, like, you know, Ren Collier, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love him. And I really like, I think he's so great. And every time he's on a podcast or, you know, doing a lecture, I listen intensely, because I think he is one of the better minds in this whole world. And he is, you know, a practicing magician, and it seems like a damn good one. In Nashville, he walked us through that group ritual, which I was like, so honored to be a part of. It was wonderful. And, yeah. So, I mean, I'm deeply fascinated. It's probably one of those topics I, you know, in the coming years, I'll get deep into and really read everything I can. So.
Yeah. Did you miss out on the Alan Greenfield led lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram in Hebrew?
Oh, man.
2 years ago.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I watched the live stream of what Alan was doing on stage, and it was great, but like, I wanted to be there.
That was such a, I don't know. Yeah. Unique and exciting night. Just to be there,
yeah,
that, you know,
yeah, it's like seeing Sinatra in concert, man. He's, you know, he's a living legend in this world, you know. Like, I love Alan Greenfield. Like, you know, I think he is so entertaining. He's the grand trickster of high strangeness, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what makes him so fun.
Oh, he's so fun, and that's a great way of putting it. Like, he's just fun, yet he's like wildly insightful.
Oh, incredibly,
very unique, brilliant mind, and. That guy was just like, you know, kind of a Walter Mitty type, where he was around so much of the, you know, important parts of like UFO history that we all love, you know, mm-hmm. like he was in the mix, man. So.
Yeah. Have you ever like talked to him personally?
Never. No, I have. I've never met him or, you know, seen him live or talked to him. I would love to, but it'd also be scary. I'd be like a little nervous that he would play like some kind of trick on me, you know, lead me down some kind of like hellier path. I'd be like, oh no, all of a sudden like spend 2 years of my life doing something. You know, like,
it would be terrific.
It would be great. It'd be terrible for my marriage and my career, but yeah, it would be. Cause I would get so deep. I would bite so hard. I'm like, okay.
It's very hard to keep up with him. It's like chasing a train, you know, on foot. Like, it's just, he has so much coming out, like, and it's all over the place, but it's either charming, funny, scary, or incredibly insightful.
Yep.
Or any combination thereof.
What a great alchemical brew he is, you know? Like,
yeah, for sure. My funniest and best memory with Alan was at Nashville, and I had him autograph his book for me.
Hell yes.
And like, we were chatting, you know, and he says, you know, what do you want me to write? I said, ah, just make it out to Jason. And he wrote, make it out to Jason, Alan Greenfield.
Oh my God. Are you shitting me? Dude, that is amazing. I mean,
Yeah, that's terrific. That's terrific. It's like, that's what you get right there.
Yeah. And that's good. That's like just good quality comedy too. That, you know, that won't get old.
No, ever. Anytime someone looks at that book, whenever I'm dead and gone, they'll be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yep.
No, I love it. I cherish the conversations that I've had with Alan. I think they've...
Oh, you should. You're very lucky to have got to spend time with him. Yeah, because he truly is like one of the living jewels of this world.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You know, and we're losing people in that generation like, oh, so much.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna break my book rule because I want to read his newest book, Saucers and Sorcerers.
Is that out?
It's out.
Oh my God.
Well, because even though it's like not, you know, the same time period that I've been doing, you know, with my books, but it's all about like the people that were investigating UFOs back in the day.
Oh yeah, man. It's going to be about like Gray Barker, mm-hmm. Bender, Keel, Mosley. And Mosley. I love Mosley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That book I'll probably read in a sitting. That's just like an ice cream sundae book. You know, it's just like, oh, you just want it to last forever.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to get that one on my list and get that done because I think,
yeah, I think so. I think so. That seems proper.
Yeah. I think it would be great. We're talking about magic and we're talking about my bookshelf a little bit earlier. And while I was looking over, I rediscovered a book that I had picked up. It's called Witchcraft in Illinois.
What?
It's not a great read. I don't recommend it. But one thing that I learned from it was that legally it is against the law to practice witchcraft in the state of Illinois, although it's never been enforced. It is a law in the books. And I thought that was fascinating.
That is a fun law. You should like dress up as a character and go to city council and like bring that law up. So, like, there are witches practicing. I mean, that would be the funniest bit, dude. I may have to drive to Illinois and have you fucking take me city council as like some like redneck character who's like all up in arms about the witches.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Oh my God. I demand you do something about this.
You know, you mentioned this filming that you've been doing. Like, you do plan to put these videos out?
I do. Yeah, I have one video out I just kind of put out as, like, the first one I, like, just – I mean, it was, you know, bear with me. I'm just new to editing. I'm usually in front of the camera type of guy. But I did I put one out. It's on my YouTube channel, which has one video on it. But it's called High Strangeness, High, comma, Strangeness, like – like hello, hi, it's cute. but I did. I went to the Van Meter, Iowa festival. Oh, it's one of the jewels of the cryptozoological world. So in like 1903, there was this giant like pterodactyl creature that was shooting laser beams out at people. It like landed on the bank. It like went into some mine, and then all the men in the town blew up the mine, and forever it lays. But yeah, it's a really wonderful story. I like loved it my whole life. It also is because it's kind of close to where I grew up. But so I went out there last year and just kind of like filmed my day there, you know, just kind of day in the life of a small town country high strangeness festival. I had fun with it. So yeah, it's more of the stuff I've been shooting is like I'm going out to like, you know, kind of historical places or like, you know, hot spot places or places where things have occurred supposedly and just kind of given the, you know, the history of it. You know, like, you know, I'll go to this Bigfoot place where the kids saw Bigfoot cross the country road and I'll tell the story just to kind of document the piece of folklore. So,
well, if you ever find yourself coming all the way across the state of Illinois to the Indiana border, hit me up because I can take you to
see. Are you serious? Well, I will in fact be going around there this summer because, and that's probably when I'm going to stop and see Nathan. Is my wife is from southern or southwestern Pennsylvania, close to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
But we, you know, it's not the worst drive from here. It's only like 14 hours. So we kind of break it up into 2 days. But I'm going to drop her off this summer and then I'm going to go on like a tour, you know, probably hit some things in West Virginia, go down to Somerset, see those guys. I would love to come have you be my tour guide for a day.
Oh, yeah, dude. There's this killer place up here. That's this old cemetery, which is Okay. Like, I'm not a ghost guy. It's my least favorite thing. Agreed. About
I like stuff. It and respect it, and it's necessary, but yeah, it's what I'm into the least.
But I just like everything else that much more.
Me too. Me too.
Right. So a friend of mine tells me about this place. He's like, have you ever heard of such and such cemetery? I haven't disclosed it, you know, publicly because I don't want to. And I was like, no, why? And he's like, the stories that people report about seeing lights out there, that's true. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you haven't heard of this at all? I was like, no, not at all. And so he's like, well, let's go out there. You know, let me know when. And I was like, all right, let's go out there. So we go out there, and this is also, I would say, 5 miles away from where he had had a incredible Bigfoot encounter. Really?
I'm sorry. And this is in where you're from, around where you're from.
Yeah. It's 20 minutes from my house.
Southern Illinois. I'm not going to, you know, dox you, but yeah.
I'll fill you in.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'll fill you in. Okay. So I'm like, all right, yeah, let's go out there. So we go out there. I don't remember what gear I took. Like, I think I had a spirit box with us. I had maybe a K2 meter or something and an audio recorder. And we're all the way at the back of the cemetery, maybe 150 yards from the road, I would say. It's completely surrounded by forest. There are no houses around. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And it's about a mile away, or maybe 2 miles from a river.
There you go.
The same river where he was camping and had the Bigfoot.
Dude, rivers are the thing.
They are. So we're out there and we hear these big crashes in the woods, like an elephant falling out of a tree. God. And I'm like, his eyes were huge because he had a really terrifying encounter and he didn't want to have another one. That's not what we were there for. And that finally stopped and we heard some like heavy breathing like out in the trees. And I'm like, that's weird. You know, we never saw anything. But as we're standing there debating it, we see this light out on the road going towards my car. And it looks like a really cheap flashlight, like a, you know, the old incandescent bulb and like 40 batteries.
Yeah, like yellowish type light. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like someone is taking a flashlight, pointed at us, but is walking towards my car. And we bolted to my car thinking someone's going to, you know, steal my car. And we get down there and there is nothing. There's no one around like this. There's no one that would be out there anyway.
Oh my Lord.
And I'm like, oh, dude, that's awesome. So then we go back to the back of the cemetery and we knew that there were some Civil War graves out there. And in the spirit of just trying to keep the mood going, I'm like, let's play some Civil War music.
Smart.
So pull out my phone, right? And I play Hell on the Wabash because we're like on the Wabash River. It's like, yeah, perfect.
Great.
And so I just have it going, you know, full volume. And I look up and there's this light going across the sky really fast. And I'm like, Keith, that might be a UFO. Keep your eyes on it. I'm going to pull up my air traffic app on my phone just to see. There are no planes over us. There's one that's like 45 minutes away going the other direction, like nothing. As I'm looking at it, though, he goes, oh, it flashed. Oh, it's gone. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, and it was gone.
What the heck?
And that was all in like an hour at this place.
Jeez, man.
So I get back home and I'm doing some research on the place and there's barely anything on the internet about this cemetery. But there's one story about the she ape that apparently the locals say hangs out at this big tree in the middle of the cemetery.
The she ape?
The she ape is what they call it.
This is good. This is juicy.
Yeah. I know. And so I went back again in January. That was in August when we went. I went in January last year and took a different friend and his daughter out. And there was like a foot of snow out. And I knew it would be really quiet, you know. And we had a voice recorder going again. And as soon as we got there to the back of the cemetery again in the same spot, we heard like a coyote. And you can even hear us talking about it on the recorder. And my friend goes, I think that was a coyote. But what we hear on the recorder was whistling, like a tune.
What?
Not just like a, but like, like, it's not what we heard while we were there at all. We heard like a yelp. And as the recording goes on, we heard the whistling again. And then a tiny person, like a kid or a young woman, say my name on the recorder.
No way, man.
To come back home, I'm going over the audio. I find all of that and I'm cleaning it up. And I thought I saw someone run past my neighbor's garage, which is, I don't know, 20 yards away from my studio. And so I'm like, all right, my mind's messing with me. Like, I'm just going to go in and go to bed. And so I shut everything down. I'm locking the door and I hear whistling again with my ears, this time coming from the northeast of my studio. And I paused and I'm like, there's no way, you know, yeah. Like my mind is just really messing with me. So I go around the back of my garage and like I'm smoking a cigarette and just hanging out, and I hear it coming from the southeast now. Yeah. And I whistled back to it and it whistled back to me, and we whistled to each other for like 5 minutes, and I just said goodnight and I went to bed, and this happened for like 3 days afterwards.
What?
Yep.
It's
pretty wild.
When did this happen again? Is this pretty recently?
Last year.
And it was during the winter. So like, yeah. Oh, dude, that is.
And at like 2 o'clock in the morning too, like where all the, you know, old people are asleep in my village.
That
like
is there's horrifying. No one around.
I wasn't scared.
Really?
I was scared at first, but when I started whistling with it and it whistling back to me, I didn't feel fear at all. I felt like it was like just playing.
You know? Yeah. Do you have any idea, thoughts about like what just like a disincarnate type of sound that was? Like, what are your thoughts about it? Obviously, I'm sure you've thought about it. Like, I got to hear what you're thinking. You know, what's going on?
Okay, so if you look at the phenomena as a whole, uh-huh. presenting itself in different facets, yep. like we've talked about tonight,
right?
And we operate on the theory that it's all kind of one thing.
Right.
Okay. I'm there at that place in August, and we're hearing big crashes. It's presenting itself as some big physical thing.
Right.
And then it distracts us from that with being a floating ball of light.
Right.
Then we come back to the same spot where we heard the crashes, and now we see a UFO.
Yeah. Can I ask a quick question? Did the UFO, was it the same? Did it have similarities with the light you saw?
No, it was bright and white.
It was bright and white. Okay.
Yes. And there were no, like, you know, you see a plane in the sky and you see the red and the blue flashing lights. It wasn't, they were not there. It was just a solid white light. I can't estimate how high up it was.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows, but I wouldn't even pretend to know.
Right.
But I go back in January, and in the same place we have the whistling where I had played the music, and I think it's like an echo. Right. Uh-huh. And then it says my name, which is weird, because no one else there was saying my name. I mean, with my friend.
So that is some next level stuff right there.
Yeah. That's what I thought too. But when I come home and I'm really focusing on connecting to what I'm hearing, you know, I'm isolating it down, getting it as clear as I can. And I'm really in a mental space where I'm connected to whatever it was. I feel like maybe I don't know, it was like a calling card and it decided to show up, you know, and present itself. Maybe it thought it was presenting itself as a child so that I wouldn't be scared.
Right.
Because when I thought I saw someone run across the garage of my neighbor's house, like I can see through my studio door, it's got like, you know, a nice glass window in the front and I can see my neighbor's garage right where I'm sitting right now. And it was like a 4-foot person, like a child.
How specific, like I know it happens so fast and it's shocking. So it's hard for like, it's hard to like zero in on some of the stuff. But if you don't mind, just was this a child wearing clothes? Did it look like a solid human being, or was it like, how, you know, kind of like an apparition at all? Like, you know, like I guess like, I know it's probably so fast and like it was hard to take it in, but like what do you remember in terms of like the physicality of it?
It was solid because it caught my attention. Like if the glare from my light on my side of the window, it has to be pretty solid for me to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. The best way I can describe it, it was like a black and white movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like grayscale.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, about 4 foot tall. I couldn't see past like the knees just because of the way the window is. I'm sitting in a regular desk chair. I'm 6'4". I can see past my monitor. I can see 98% of my window where I'm looking out right now. And I can see the neighbor's garage. Even though I have the glare, the garage is white and there's a street light to the right. I could see it clearly. And yeah, and I saw it just ran past. I don't know. How fast does it take to run 30 feet?
Yeah.
It didn't seem inhumanly fast.
Right. Like you said, you thought it was a kid, right? I mean, that was your first thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I still think, you know, I don't know what it was,
yeah,
but I think it presented itself that way for whatever reason, it wanted to communicate, and we communicated and lasted for a few days. It never heard it in the house, only when I was outside.
You know, that is so amazing because, like, if you think about this, there's so much bang for your buck with this experience because you really, I mean, like, it maybe even more, but right away, I think there's like four different components that it's showing itself. It's like the kind of like large cryptid or, you know, creature crashing through the forest in such a dramatic physical thing, UFO in the sky, orb of light on close to the ground, disincarnate voices. I mean, like, you got a lot.
Yeah, I have the recordings if you want to hear them.
My friend, I would love to hear everything, you know, like, I mean, like, if you were serious about, you know, taking me out to this place, I mean, like,
no, absolutely.
How does the spring sound, man? I'll buy lunch. I mean, I'm a great, you know, I'm from Midwest, so I always come with lots of food and I always, you know, provide snacks. So
my favorite thing about this place is the road that goes to it. It's like taking the most direct route from my house.
Right.
The road is like a tunnel of trees.
Oh my.
Like Lord. The trees, it's like there's just a road going through solid trees. Both sides up over the road. It's like a fairy fantasy land.
You know, see, now you're talking production value here, you know? Like this,
I know.
This is a, you know, let's greenlight this project. This is
no problem.
This is wonderful.
Sorry, this is the you can hear us walking through the snow.
Yeah.
And there's the whistling. Hopefully it's not too loud.
Okay. What was that?
It was a howl. I don't know if it was a coyote.
Did you hear the whistling?
He goes, right?
Yeah. Well, here, I'll go back.
Did I hear it twice?
Yeah, it whistles two separate times.
I heard both of them. What was that?
It was a howl. I don't know if it was a coyote.
Whoa.
So that's the first one. Here's the second instance of it whistling. It's like,
no, there's like a rhythm to it. It's bouncy.
Yeah.
It's bouncy. Yeah, yeah. It's not like a straight, like,
right.
It's like,
okay, here's
the light is sometimes catching just some.
There was like a, did you hear that little like barky sound?
No, do it again, please.
The light is sometimes catching.
Did you hear it that time?
It sounded like a voice to me.
Let's do it one more time.
The light is sometimes catching just some.
Did you hear that last part?
That was a voice, right?
That was where it said my name.
Wait, do it again.
Hold on. Yeah.
What? That just, the hair on my arms are standing straight up right now.
That felt, man, like, and I'm sitting here going through and breaking all that down, and I look out and I see a little kid run past my neighbor's garage, and I'm like, no, I'm out. Like, I'm just going to go to bed. My mind
was showing you that was the kid who was saying that, maybe.
That's what I feel like.
Dude, right? I mean, like, that is just, I mean, like, I have got the heebie-jeebies right now. I need a shot of bourbon. My Lord. That was, I mean, like, it was such a hard J.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it was really, like, you know, very clear.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It didn't sound like my friend's daughter at all. I mean, I think she was 16 Dude. When we went out there.
Oh, my God. So, like,
and, of course, you hear his voice and my voice, so you know it doesn't sound like either of us. Like,
oh, my God. Well, I want to ask you now. I feel like I'm going to, like, turn the show around on you and ask you 1,000 questions.
That's all right. My show was about having a conversation.
Okay, good. Well, do you mind if I, like, just drill you a little bit?
Okay. You drill me as hard as you want, okay.
Bud. So, this area you live in now, how long have you lived there?
I've lived in this county my entire life.
Okay.
And the town that I live in now, I've only been living here for 2 years, but it's literally 5 minutes away from my hometown.
So you are very, like, familiar with this. This is very familiar territory. Okay, so it's not new. That's the first
question. No, not at all.
Does it have a high strange history, like, that is been written about, documented, or just like through word of mouth that you know of?
No, not really. There's a ghost hunting group here, but they're like, you know, one of them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like openly badmouth them or whatever, but I don't have a lot to say about them.
They've
investigated a few like haunted places or whatever, and they've had some pretty good evidence in a few places as well. But overall, no.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know of any other spots that are similar to this, or is this kind of like, holy shit, I might have a great little lab here to experiment with?
I've never come across anything that has this much variety of activity ever.
Okay.
Here.
And how many times have you been out there?
Three.
Right.
First time was when we heard the crash and saw the UFO and saw the light. The second time was what I just played the audio from. We didn't have anything on the audio recorder the first time.
Right.
The third time, we recorded for an hour and 40 minutes on the audio recorder, and I came back and put it into my computer, and it was corrupted. So I don't know if there was anything on it or not.
How far away is this location from where you live?
Maybe 20 minutes.
I mean, you know, it is always one of those things I do think about that I don't love. Because like when you tell me like you went and had these kind of, you know, fairly dramatic experiences at this cemetery location, and then 20 miles away from there, or 20 minutes away from there, it like followed you. I mean, that to me is – this is like, I mean, like you realize this is a pretty extraordinary experience.
You know, and I thought that too. And then the more I dug into it, which I haven't even, I mean, there's a lot more to this. I started to see how it's not necessarily an extraordinary experience. It is a big coincidence or synchronicity that it's less than a mile away from a ley line.
Oh my.
And
right by a river, right?
Yep. And right by a river.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't know if you've caught this. There was a podcast special a couple of years ago. It was like a 5-part special on, I don't remember if it was on Indrid Cold or the Mothman, and I don't remember who did it.
Was it called?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I listened to that too. Yeah.
Okay. So on that, they talked about a certain company that always seems to have, you know, locations.
And they talked about Western Nebraska, a ton of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Are you not naming the company because you're scared like I am?
No.
Yeah. I remember what company it was.
Well, I'll edit part of this out because I just don't want to reveal my location.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a Honeywell. Okay. This was an independent business. It was called. They made labels for millions of different customers for all kinds of different products. They get bought out by Honeywell.
Right.
And within 2 years, Honeywell shuts them down.
Yep.
They still own the building and the land. There's no activity there. Every once in a while, there's like a truck or an SUV there. It is like halfway between my house and that cemetery and almost directly on the ley line.
Interesting.
Isn't that weird?
Yes.
Now, I don't think it's like using technology at that facility to make that cemetery have this activity.
No.
I just think it's a weird coincidence.
It is.
Because of the location.
And especially where, when the, you know, I can't remember the, it was that MUFON guy from South Carolina, or like, I can't remember, you know, he was the guy, they were interviewing him for the Indrid Cold podcast. He was like some MUFON dude, but he was talking about the defense contracting connections and like, it's funny. What a coincidence that you and I might've been like two of the 14 people who listened to that. but it also affected both of us, you know, I mean, like you live close to one that sent me on a deep dive into Nebraska and defense contracting stuff. And I found a ton of weird shit because a lot of where the place right around the places where they have it, a bunch of weird stuff has happened.
Wow.
Yeah. And just like that guy said, and I was like, really? I don't remember hearing UFO stuff. Sure. Fucking enough. He was right. And I was like, whoa, that is deeply strange and kind of like startled me a little bit.
Well, the name, obviously you think of like bees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you bees live in a beehive. They make honey. And then you start thinking about like the Bait Cabal out of Cincinnati and NEMA and in Somerset, the beehive structure that they built there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just. It can't all be a coincidence.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. You know, I mean,
just to admit that it might not be like that.
I know. I mean, that's why I'm like, you know, I don't know if you can keep this in if you want, but like, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, because my brother, like, I'm telling you, like, the weirdest shit has been happening because I've been studying this place called Odo County in Nebraska, right? And since the 1800s, the fucking weirdest shit in the world. And it's right on the Missouri River, one of the big rivers in the country. Uh-huh. And all this kind of Point Pleasant shit has been happening there for a long time. And so I have been deeply researching it for the last year. And I was in Nebraska City, which is in Odo County. It's the biggest place. This is crazy. With the town historian, I get a phone call from my agent. My agent goes, "Hey, you're never going to believe this. You just got offered a part in this, like, you know, $5 million indie movie." I was like, "What? Really?" And she goes, "And it shoots in Nebraska." I was like, "What? Really?" I go, "Where in Nebraska?" She goes, "Nebraska, a place called Nebraska City." And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Nebraska City is a small town in Nebraska. There's never been a movie shot there. Not even to that. Movies aren't shot in Nebraska, period, very often. The only job I've ever worked in Nebraska was this job. I was in Nebraska City. In the last year, all I've been doing is studying Nebraska City in this area. And then I get offered a movie job shooting there. The blood, like, rushed out of my face. I'm like, "Oh, wow. So the world is magical." Like, officially.
Yeah, that's what I was just
saying. Yeah, I'm like, that is too many synchronicities stacked up in, like, a 30-second period. Like, I was like, I feel like I was almost going to, like, throw up. It, like, ontologically discombobulated me, you know? So, like, when you say stuff, I'm like, yeah, man, I think, you know, I think it was Robert Anton Wilson who said, when you are doing consciousness expanding research of any kind, the synchronicities are ramped up 1,000%. He's like, you want to generate synchronicities in your life? Expand your consciousness, whether it's like reading a UFO book, doing meditation, reading about Aleister Crowley, blah, blah, blah. Listening to Penny Real, listening to your show. That is how you and you know what? I can't say that's fact and, like, prove it to you, but I believe that as much as I believe in anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's just, it's fucking nuts. Yeah.
You stare into the abyss, and the abyss stares back.
I don't want to, you know, it's such an old adage, but, like, it is just fucking true, you know? And, oh, man, it's just wild. And it's so exciting, though, you know? Like, I feel like, oh, there is a way to, I think, generate high strangeness, you know? I think it takes getting obsessed with things and maybe potentially, you know, sometimes in an unhealthy way. But feel like it works, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's like, I don't know. There are so many things that I want to put time and energy into that I just can't do it all at once. Me too. You know what I mean? And I feel like, how many times have I missed an opportunity because I couldn't afford that time?
Yep.
You know, who knows what I could have stumbled onto or manifested. You know, if maybe that's the better word.
But, like, you know, I think one of the things I love about kind of how, you know, we've been talking about it, like, you going out and, like, and I don't know how long you've been doing kind of boots on the ground research. I'm fairly new to it, you know, but one of the wonderful things is that it's like these mini vacations. You really get out there. Mm-hmm. I feel like I used to play a ton of video games, and I still do. I love video games. There's nothing wrong with them. But, like, I want to do that less, and I want to go out into rural country a lot more. That's what I want to do more than anything. So when I have a spare day and I'm able and I don't have things I need to do, I am out there, whether it's with one of my research partners who I have locally or myself. I mean, like, or even my wife, we'll go take, like, a hike out in the rural country. And to me, that's still research because I'm always choosing areas where weird stuff has happened.
My poor wife. Whether she knows it or not.
Honestly, yeah, I probably shouldn't do that. But and she's from the Chestnut Ridge area.
Oh, so, dude, yeah, yeah.
You bet. I'm going to try to take
Small Town Monsters documentary is Chestnut Ridge.
That place is just teeming with weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. I talked to Stan Gordon a couple years ago on the show. And
oh, really?
Stuff. Yeah, Stan's my favorite.
I love Stan. In fact, I'm going to write to him before I go out to the area this summer and see if I can take him to lunch. Just, you know.
Oh, that'd be great. Have a lunch with Stan Gordon.
Oh, it would be great. Yeah, I'm just a huge fan. I think his work is so good. And he was also, talk about kind of like a pioneer and not afraid to, like, I mean, like, he was talking about Bigfoot and UFOs in the 70s. And he was like, you know, I don't know really how he was viewed because that, you know, was a little before my time. But like, I bet it was controversial. I bet people were like, all right, you lost me when you started mixing Bigfoot and flying saucers. You know, like,
he stopped people from calling his hotline, though, to like,
right?
As a teenager. Like, I want to say he started when he was a teenager.
He did. He did. Well, dude, there was a couple of those guys, like Ray Boche. You know who Ray Boche is?
I'm familiar because of you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, dude, he called Herbert Shermer, the police officer in Nebraska who was abducted, when he was 12 years old.
Wow.
He was friends with John Keel when he was 16. So, I mean, like, he was just kind of one of those precocious kids who just started writing letters to, like, his, like, Ivan T. Sanderson. And they, I mean, like, and then had, like, a lifelong, like, friendship with him from when he was a kid. So that's why, I mean, like, why Ray is, to me, such an interesting person, because, like, man, he has been in it. And he this, the Odo County, what I talk about a lot when I'm on these podcasts or lectures, he was the one who really kind of, like, exposed that place and taught me that this is a place I should focus.
Oh, dude, we have covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah. I mean, we could do it for another 10 hours. I cannot shut up about this stuff.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I hope that we get the chance to do it again. And
please, anytime.
Anytime that you want to just have someone to bounce something off of, just hit me up.
Oh, man, great. Look at this. New buddies.
Yeah, for sure. And anytime, like you said, if you end up wanting to come and check that place out, I'd be glad to take you there. No problem. Yep, or if you want to go by yourself, I can tell you how to get there.
Well, I would prefer you go with me. I'm not going by myself. Not because I'm scared of, like, what could happen high strange wise. I'm just scared of people in the night by myself, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, people scare me more than, like, high strangeness. So I believe in the buddy system.
Absolutely. Although, the entire time I shot my documentary, I was by myself entirely.
Oh, horrifying.
All over Western Kentucky and had places. But yeah, anyway, we've covered a lot of stuff. You know, just take a little bit of time. Yeah, you know, you've mentioned your High Strangeness series that's upcoming. Like, is there anything else you'd like to promote while you're here?
I'm actually recording a batch of podcasts, which I was going to ask you if you'd be a guest. I enjoy talking about this stuff so much, so I thought I would just give myself an excuse to talk about it once a week. So I am starting a podcast and it is called High Strangeness. I probably won't release it till the end of March because I have like some work commitments where I won't be able to do it for a couple of weeks. So I'm trying to, you know, get a batch of like 8 or 9 that I can just release, so I can release it consistently. So yeah, that will be coming up probably like in a month and I'm excited about it. I've been talking to some really fun people and I don't know, man, I just love gabbing about this stuff. So yeah. This is just a little way to contribute. And yeah, you can find me on social media at Bergmaster5000.
I love it so much.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm a child.
it's fantastic. It's your personality, man. It shines right through. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, you know? I think you do. Yeah, I'm a goofball. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you so much, man, for coming on. This has just been a terrific conversation.
Oh, thank
you. I love having someone come on the show with no agenda, with nothing specific to talk about, and just let it unfurl. We're just
two dudes
hanging out in the patio, just talking.
My brother, thanks for all the cool ones. I appreciate it. This patio is comfortable.
It is one comfortable patio. All right. We'll see everybody next time, and go check out Steve Berg and High Strangeness. All of our archived episodes are available for free right now at patreon.com/beyondthepatio or on our YouTube channel. Follow us on social media, give us a like if you don't mind, and if you have anything weird happen to you and you want to share the tale, hit me up at paranormalpatio@gmail.com.